But I think what we'll do is move on to our last speaker for the evening, Tom Muir, if you'd like to.
Yeah.
Take it away, Tom.
I'll probably stand up as well, actually.
This is only exercise I get these days. When I was asked to do this, I was trying to sort of put together something, and I ended up really having not a clue what the hell. So it'd be new to me as well, so I don't know what's happening. But there was an old folk tale about two men from Orfa who, one Hogmanay, decided to set off in the Stromness to buy a pig whiskey, a pig being a stoneware chair full of whiskey. So they walked along the road over the Brigglewaith, and they went up the hill, up the brae, past Howe, and along there and down Kirstman Road into Stromness, bought the whiskey. They were retracing their steps back again. And when they came to Howe, the name of the farm is from the Old Norse haug, which means a mound. And the reason it was called that is because it had a huge mound next to it, a massive, great, huge mound. And they could hear the sound of pipes playing. And when they went to investigate, see where the sound was coming from, they found that it was coming from inside the mound and that there was a door open and light streaming out. And when they looked in, all the trolls, all the wee fairy folk were all dancing. Now the man that had the pig whiskey on his back decided to go in and join in the reel. So he got in and started dancing too while his friend waited for him outside. Now, the friend was getting a bit bored and he was saying, "Aren't you coming out yet?" And he said, "I'll wait until the reel's finished." So he waited for a while and he goes, "You're not coming out yet, I'll wait until the reel's finished." So he waited for a while and in the end he got fed up, so he decided to go home. Now, tragically, the pig whiskey never turned up. Neither did the man as well, but I mean, you've got to get your priorities right. It was Hogmanay. This was their New Year's booze. No sign of him. So the next day they went back to the mound at Howe and they explored it looking for the doorway. No doorway, no music, no trows, no man, and worst of all, no whiskey. Now, a year passed. And the same man was walking up the road again, going back to Stromness to buy more whiskey for, hopefully, they would get it this year. And he was walking up by Hull when he heard the sound of pipes. And he went and there was the door standing open in the side of the mound. Light streaming out. And he looked inside and there's his friend still dancing. And he said, "Aren't you coming out yet?" And he goes, "I'll wait until the drill's finished." So the man stretched in, grabbed his pal and pulled him out. And he said, "What did you do that for?" "I just started dancing." "No, you didn't," he says. "You've been in there for a year." "I have not." He said, "Look at your feet, man." So he looked down and his shoes was just the uppers flapping around. He had danced the soles off his shoes. And what was worse was the pig whiskey was empty as well. Now, that is a story that is you find associated with archaeological sites like the mound at Howe, where somebody goes in and they think they've just been there for an evening, a few minutes, a few seconds, whereas in the rest of the world, in our world, time has moved on. Sometimes by a year, sometimes by 14 years or more. The story of Rip Van Winkle had fell asleep for 20 years. Washington Irving that wrote that, his father came from Chaplaincy in Orkney. So, you know, here you've got that same thing going into literature. Now, this is where I have to start being careful because it's been recorded, so I can't tell the full version. But edited highlights to try to avoid legal procedures. was that there was two significant mounds being excavated in Orkney in 1978, Hull and the Boer Kirsten. And 1979 rained. Now, in case it's like, when did it rain? 1979 is when it rained. It pretty much rained all year. It was horrible. And I was born and brought up on a farm. I dropped out of school at 14 as dyslexic before I'd been invented. And I was supposed to work on the farm, was the idea. But I hadn't been consulted with this. I had other ideas, like, let's not work on a farm. So I decided to run away and join the circus. But there wasn't a circus in town, so I joined an archaeological dig instead of being the nearest equivalent. And that was in the summer of 1980, and 1980 was in such contrast that the thing that was the final straw for me, quite literally, no pun intended, was me and my eldest brother had cut a field of oats with a scythe, you know, by hand, and bind oat the sheaves by hand, 19th century fashion, because we couldn't get a tractor on the field, that it was too wet. It sank. Sent in a second tractor, pulled the first one, it sank. So we were up there cutting away, and I remember London Calling by the Clash, coming on the radio, and just thinking, I need to get over here. So I went to work at Hull. Now the interesting thing was, and I only found this out years later, was that when they first started digging there in 1978, there was a hurricane had blown across called Hurricane Katrina. Now they reused the name back in the, 10 years ago or so, when New Orleans got devastated by Hurricane Katrina. Different Katrina. Probably that one's mum. But Hurricane Katrina came in and it blew away the Fides Hut at Howe. And they had found a skeleton on the top of the burial. There was a woman's grave, a Viking woman's grave on top. Whether it was that one, I'm not sure. But they'd found a human burial on top. All these things were in bags, of course, in the Fides Hut, and they ended up on every barbed wire fence in about a mile radius. They were going gathering, literally gathering the Fides bags off the barbed wire. And folk said, aha, that's because they disturbed the fairy market. Hull was still remembered as being the home of the Trolls, and they said that's why that site was hit with a gale that blew away the Fides Hut. So, still that folklore there. Now, the one thing that I remember very vividly about it was that it was a wonderful multi-phase site. What you had originally was two early Neolithic houses. And then there was a maze hall type tomb built on top, which had an exquisite passageway. The passage of it, the stonework on that was beautiful. I mean, no other words for it. It was gorgeous, just beautiful. And then you had an Iron Age roundhouse on top of that, which started falling down because it was not beautiful. They had cut the tomb down and they had built this roundhouse on top of it. And then that started falling down. So they built a broch around the original structure and a village around it with ditches and ramparts like you would see at the broch at Gurness. Then that started falling down, so you got Pictish buildings on the rubble. And then when that fell down and became a mound, there was a Viking woman's burial on top. There was a glass linen smoother found, and I think it might be the one that's in Stromness Museum. But there was certainly a woman's grave good, you know, what is usually associated with female burials. Although these days, Viking burials are starting to become a bit more complex, not quite so straightforward anymore. Swords and spears and axes, that's a bloke. linen, you know, working, spinning material, loom weights, sickles, brooches, that's a woman. Not quite so straightforward these days, but that's another story and I don't have time to go into it. But if you read the archaeological report, it will tell you that it was originally a stalled kiln with a charnel house in front of it. That is what, I'm going to use an archaeological term here, it's known as bollocks. if you want a bit more description, complete bollocks. Because that was actually written by someone who didn't have a background in Neolithic, and there was not much known about early Neolithic houses at the time. We've excavated, I've personally excavated several since then at different sites. So we kind of know what we're looking at these days. But they had reused, in the Iron Age, they'd reused the chamber of the tomb with the passageway, and they turned it into an earth house that you could get from lifting a stone slab on the floor of the Broch. You could go into a lovely constructed earth house with stone pillars holding up a stone slab roof. And aged 17, on a beautiful, hot August day in 1980, I was allowed to go down into that earth house on a plank of wood, but no further than the plank of wood because the clay floor was undisturbed. So don't go putting the wood in that. So I went down, and going into it was incredible because the feeling of stillness was quite amazing, and being from a really hot day, to go into this cool shade, like climbing into a refrigerator, was really, really strange, made it feel even more unworldly. And it was absolutely, it was a fantastic experience. And one that very few people had, because then the roof was taken off, it was filled in. Now, I got into a slight bit of trouble with an art site, because they decided it seems like, you know, yeah. I ended up doing the tours. People came by the site, I would take them around and tell them what we were up to and what we were finding. One day I got bored, and at this time I was, you know, a sort of teenage punk with spiky orange hair, safety pins, crass t-shirt, you know, and there was this couple of very elderly Americans turned up on the site, this man and wife. And I was showing them around, and inside the Broch, there was a ring of orthostats, upright stones, which formed a partition. So the Broch was kind of partitioned a bit like a Russian doll, you know. You had a row around the outside, so you had this passageway around it, and then you had an inner center with the hearth. And in this this row of uprights looked just like a stone circle. So when these nice old Americans were there, 20 foot was away, and my apologies for any Americans in the audience, especially the one I'm married to. I said, "You see that over there? Ring of vodka? Yeah? So you see that there? I goes, "Well, you see, on a Sunday, if it was raining, instead of going off the ring of vodka, they just go in here. This is an indoor ring of vodka." And I remember that the expression they said, "Gee, that's neat." And start folding up there. And I thought, ha ha ha. And I did, I think, try that again a second time for a laugh with some a visiting group who I didn't know. But it turned out to be led by David Clark from the National Museum, and I suspect Caroline was one of them. So if I did,
that's probably what led to my first admission to the Balfour.
Probably. It's a heart failure up there, you know. But then, just to kind of write briefly, I mean, you know, it's been a long time in archaeology. I've been very privileged to have excavated, been involved in the excavation of the ditch at Brodgar. So I stood in the bottom of the ditch in Brodgar, which was fantastic. Found a standing stone setting at the back of Mayshow, which I was so pleased with. And I went home, and my then wife had been potty training our son all day because she was expecting our second child. And so I went home and I said, I found a setting for a standing stone. And she said, oh, is that all? What do you mean, is that all? She goes, well, there's lots of standing stones. She said, not impressed in the slightest. But probably the most surreal experience was shinning down a rope into Mainhow when it first been reopened, since it was discovered in 1946. Alan Tankiness, in this big mound, there's this amazing Iron Age chamber with steps that leads down to a cistern of water. And when we heard that this had been rediscovered again, I went out to investigate, along with a friend of mine, Rob, with the fags in the ship at the end of the bay here. And Colin Richards was there, along with Doogie Barson, who I used to sit next to Doogie at school because we were in a special table to ourselves right in front of the teacher's desk. He hadn't changed any since he was 10. Apart from being having a bit less hair. But he'd uncovered this site, and there was a floodlights, there was a generator with floodlights, and there was a rope tied to the back of a pickup. And you had to lower yourself down into the chamber because they filled it up with oil drums, and the stones were so slippy you couldn't put your feet on them. It was like soap. So we lowered ourselves down, and it was the nearest I ever got to being Indiana Jones. It was an incredible thing, and I went back and dug it later as well. But anyway, I think that's probably enough of my weird little career in archaeology and confessions. I am sorry for that.
Well, I hesitate to ask for fear of what the answers might be.